Good morning.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How you feeling?
I feel fantastic. The energy buzz that you get when the new year starts, you think you're going to hit all your gym goals. You're going to modify that diet. I'm still in that bubble.
Gosh.
So don't burst it for me. It's still January 8th.
January
So
8th.
this year I was very intentional. I said, listen, I am not doing any January 2nd. I will meet you January 8th. And we're going to talk about that year goal. But for now, let me just roll into a little bit more cake and good food. And now I'm ready. I started my day bright and early. I got on a Peloton bike.
Good. I love that.
So here I am.
Here we are. Here we are, and we get to record on the mic. I'm so excited.
So what are we talking about with our people today?
There's just been so much buzz. I don't know if you follow TikTok and the socials, but there's so much buzz on PCOS. And I thought, you know what? Let's come on the mic and just set the record straight. Let's talk about PCOS because people are out here taking advice from online and people, and don't get me wrong, TikTok is wonderful. I think people can learn so much, but let's get on this mic and really inform our listeners about PCOS.
You know how long you've been trying to get me to talk about this?
You've been dodging it, girl. You're like, oh my gosh, PCOS.
I'm like,
Oh my, that's
PCOS,
so
girl, where do
boring.
we
That's so
start? I mean, there is like so much to discuss. So we're going to try to make it brief and concise for our listeners today.
absolutely. And hopefully informal that people can walk away with tangible information on today's podcast. So
Absolutely, absolutely. So, girl, shoot away. I'm all yours.
you are the expert here on PCOS,
How
okay?
much am I getting paid per questions here?
We'll talk about that at a later time. We're gonna talk about that. But my first question for you is, what exactly is PCOS? Spell it out. Just in general, what is it?
Well, the official definition of PCOS basically. PCOS stands for polycystic ovary syndrome. So, polycystic ovary syndrome. And the reason why I like to first take a moment to describe that is because a lot of women will sometimes come to me and tell me, oh, I think I have PCOS, right? Not really understanding exactly what it means, but they have a combination of signs and symptoms that Google put together and they're like, oh, you probably have PCOS and they hear. But it's a health condition that usually impact women. It can usually be present during the reproductive years. It is characterized by hormonal imbalance and can manifest with various symptoms, right? So the most common symptoms that will usually bring women in is the fact that they have irregular menstrual cycles. They may have had an ultrasound that showed some cyst on the ovaries, and they may have noticed that they have excessive hair on their face, and they're like, oh, there we go, got PCOS. Let's go talk about it, right? But if you have to think about it, it's a spectrum of symptoms, and it's very difficult to just put it in a bottle and sell it like that, right? So I like to take a moment to dissect it a little bit.
Now, when I'm perusing the streets of TikTok, you see the lady who's the typical poster face of PCOS, lots of hair on the face, or has a little bit of weight on board. Is that how PCOS looks in everybody, or do people's symptoms or signs differ? Like, is everybody the same way?
Absolutely not. So the challenge with PCOS is that, like I said, it's a spectrum and an array of symptoms, right? So you will find that it's not cookie cut. Everyone presents a little bit differently. And with a little bit of investigation, when you put the puzzle together, you're able to come to the diagnosis most of the time. But to talk about the most common signs and symptoms, like I briefly mentioned earlier, usually it starts with irregular menstrual cycles, right? Women with PCOS may have irregular period and most likely infrequent period. So instead of menstruating once a month, they will say, oh, I noticed that my cycle is usually every like 3 months or so, or it doesn't have a pattern to it, but it doesn't come as frequently as it used to. You will also notice that upon presentation, many women will report acne, excessive hair on their face, or they will say, "Oh, I've noticed I started shaving more. I shave my face and it makes me feel weird, like that's not normal, or my hair is falling." And that's a symptom that is associated with hyperandrogenism, which is a sign that you have elevated androgens, right? Such as testosterone. Testosterone. So male pattern baldness, things like that, that are associated with high testosterone. Again, as the acronym stands for, polycystic ovaries. But most women don't come in telling you, "I have polycystic ovaries." They don't know that. But occasionally, they may have had a reason to get a pelvic ultrasound. And on that, the person who evaluated them will say, "Oh, you know, I noticed that you have polycystic ovaries. You should talk to your gynecologist about it," right? So that's usually how they pick up that sign. And the main culprit behind those symptoms, insulin resistance. Many patients with PCOS have insulin resistance, which can then lead to long-term issues we're going to get into. But that's overall the most common signs and symptoms that you find associated with PCOS.
Why do we worry about PCOS? What are the implications? Why do we need to worry about PCOS?
Well, the long-term implications that usually most providers like you and I worry about are mostly tied around cardiovascular issues, right? Long-term include hypertension, high cholesterol, hardening of the arteries, all those cardiovascular issues that can impact the quality and the length of the life of an individual. Then you think about the center. If you think about PCOS on a map, you will notice if I had to pick one thing and put it right in the center of the map, that will be leading to so many other issues is insulin resistance. So you pin your insulin resistance in the middle and you think about everything that can derive from that. Type 2 diabetes, that's an issue. So insulin resistance, which is often associated with PCOS, can lead to increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. That's a long-term implication. So when you have a patient who presents with PCOS, you have to counsel them. And as you're thinking about the treatment options, think long-term about why it matters that they correct that. Then the next thing that can stem off of that insulin resistance issue is infertility, which is not intuitive, right? But there's a long pathway that you and I learned in med school that I will spare you guys. That goes, there's a communication between insulin and estrogen. And that communication gets a little bit cuckoo. And as a result, the typical pathway that allows a woman to menstruate on a regular basis is impacted. And it leads to a lack of ovulation. Lack of ovulation means no regular menstruation and infertility. So for women who are trying to conceive, that's an issue because you're not ovulating, you're not able to track, you're not able to plan full time intercourse, and you can't have a baby, right? So that's usually an issue that comes up for women in reproductive age. And they come in, they think, "Oh, me, I have PCOS, I'm not ovulating, I'm overweight. What can we do about it?" So that's a long-term implication. Another one that is very concerning, again, if you're not ovulating and you're not shedding the lining of that uterus, what happens is that over time it gets thickened. And as it gets thickened, it can undergo some transformation that can be malignant and lead to endometrial cancer. So irregular menses, lack of frequent ovulation in PCOS will lead to the thickening of the lining of the uterus, thus increase the risk of uterine cancer. That's something that is very, very important to keep in mind when evaluating patients with PCOS, thinking about their long-term risk. And one long-term implication that we tend to forget to talk about is the mental health issue associated with PCOS. So a lot of women will present to me with PCOS and depression and anxiety. And usually it stems from the fact that they've been dealing with this issue for so long. They feel like they've been chasing their tail. They put the work in, they modify their diet, but nothing is happening. And it can impact their self-esteem. It leads to issues with depression and anxiety. And unfortunately, we don't necessarily do a good job at addressing that, which is something that having this conversation reminds me of.
Wow, I really like how you describe that. You know, it's really easy to visualize when you talk about that insulin resistance and everything kind of coming out of that. I've never heard it, you know, described in that way. And I think it's like full circle. So thank you for that. And just listening to you and thinking about everything that can go wrong that can stem from PCOS, it makes me wonder, like, what are the risk factors of getting PCOS?
It's a great question. First, it's important to note that the exact cause of PCOS is not fully understood, right? What we know right now is that there's a combination of genetics, right? So family history is important. We do know that a woman who has a family history of PCOS has a higher risk of developing PCOS. You have hormonal and lifestyle factors. So those are some known risk factors. Now, if we have to dissect that a little bit, so we know that thinking about genetics, we talked about family history, there's an ethnicity part of it. We have identified that women from certain groups, like South Asian women or Black women, have a higher prevalence of PCOS. So that's something that, you keep in mind when you see a patient and thinking about their ethnic background. Now, thinking about their physical appearance. So obesity is one. So if I have a woman who presents to me and starts to spit out those symptoms and she is obese, although not all women with obesity will have PCOS, I have to consider the fact that she is at an increased risk of having PCOS, right? Hormonal imbalance. So someone who tells you in history, irregular menses or, acne issues, like when you put the picture together, hormonal imbalance is a risk factor for PCOS. And then lifestyle factors, unhealthy lifestyle habits around diet, which is a little bit more intuitive. If I had to summarize, those would be the risk factors that I would think about.
What are some of the misconceptions that you've heard floating there about PCOS?
The most common one, I must say, is that all women with PCOS are overweight. Yes, which is completely not true. PCOS is not exclusive to overweight or obese women. All women of all body type can have PCOS. So that's one thing. Every woman with an ovarian cyst or multiple ovarian cysts have PCOS. No, it is not true. You can have ovarian cysts that are just physiological. You can even have abnormal or premalignant or malignant ovarian cysts. That does not mean that you have PCOS. Another one is, oh, PCOS is just a fertility issue. No, it's not. True, fertility issues can arise from PCOS due to irregular ovulation, but PCOS is a broader condition. Like I mentioned, it's a spectrum. And if you have a regular period, you must have PCOS. That's another huge misconception, which again is not true. And what's another one that I can think of?
I know for me when I was younger, because I was obese and I had my facial hair and my acne. So every time I went to a doctor, I can't tell you how many times they checked for, like after 18 years old, I was checked. They were checking my hormones left and right, left and right. I'm like, no, I just got a
I
little
just
extra
have,
hair.
yes,
Just have a little extra acne.
exactly.
So, you know, I'd say the acne, increased acne and hair on the face. You could have all of
Yes.
those without having PCOS.
Yes. Oh, another good one is that birth control can cure PCOS.
Speak on that a little bit, because just from speaking to a lot of my friends and people, they kind of feel that when they were diagnosed, birth control was pushed on them. And so talk about, I know that's kind of complicated, but talk about that hormonal treatment in PCOS, and does that apply to everybody?
Well, first of all, like anytime I have a patient who is concerned about PCOS, and once we confirm the diagnosis of PCOS, I usually like to ask this question: what is your goal? Knowing the spectrum of symptoms that come with PCOS, are you aiming to clear your acne? Are you trying to get regular, predictable menstrual cycles? Are you trying to get pregnant? Are you hoping to lose weight and see results in the work that you put in? Are you looking for assistance in modifying your lifestyle, your diet, and things like that? So once we establish that goal, then we can talk about treatment. To piggyback on the birth control misconception, birth control can cure PCOS. The reason why I made that statement is because I hear that a lot. But the reality is that birth control is used to address a subset of symptoms, right, associated with PCOS. And usually those symptoms have to do with acne and irregular menstrual cycles. If you remember the long-term implication that I mentioned before with increased risk of endometrial cancer, in order to prevent that thickening of the lining of the uterus from happening, you have to create a cycle that allows that woman to shed that lining often. So when you put her on birth control, you allow her to shed every 28 days if she's on a monthly plan, or every 3 months if that's what she chooses to do. That's the way you can use birth control pills. And if she's not even trying to use birth control pill to achieve that, you can control that abnormal thickening by just putting in an IUD that is hormonal, right? So that even if she's not menstruating often, she still has an IUD in place that regulates the environment of the lining of the uterus, controlling that abnormal thickening that can happen. So, and acne, birth control pill can help with help clear your skin. So that's the reason why when you have a young woman who's not trying to get pregnant, she's just worried about her skin and the fact that she's not menstruating, you can put her on a birth control pill and address that subset of symptoms.
And then, how about for the subset of patients who are struggling with infertility? What does treatment look like for them?
So when it comes to infertility, I have to state that every woman is different, right? In terms of the treatment that will work for her, you have to think about the patient as an individual. So it's hard for me to articulate a treatment that I can just, slap on everybody because it doesn't work that way. Some women just need to get to a place where they're able to spontaneously ovulate. And if you're able to get her there, then she can get pregnant. Some women may need support, including assisted reproductive treatment, such as IVF. So you can see how you can go from a very minimal approach all the way to a more invasive approach. So usually when I have someone who has issues with infertility, I really have to take the time to dissect what makes sense for her and see if she's even up if it's even appropriate for me to take care of her as a general gynecologist and obstetrician, or if she needs to be seen by an infertility specialist. So when it comes to fertility, I just want to say that it's hard to just have a plan that works for everybody.
Speak about diet and exercise and its role in PCOS, because I've seen there's PCOS diets there, and a lot of people, I'm in a amazing group called E2M where you've seen women losing so much weight and just doing unable to conceive who have been struggling with PCOS, and for them just changing their diet has been revolutionary for them. Speak about what diet and exercise can do for a woman with PCOS.
So that's a very good question, and I think it's a good one to just refer to the main culprit, right? So lifestyle modification, diet and exercise will impact obesity that is linked often to PCOS. So what happens for those women is that they start to make changes to the diet to be a little bit more healthy. They start to exercise. Once they start to lose a little bit of weight, guess what happens? That decreases the level of insulin resistance they were experiencing. As a result, it relieves the pressure on the pathway that allows ovulation that was initially impeded by the insulin resistance. All of a sudden, the ovaries go, ta-da, I am free, right? So they start to ovulate in a more regular pattern. And when they regulate themselves, they're now able to be back on track where if they are actually trying to get pregnant, you see this sudden rate and increase of conception happening, and they remember, oh, you know, I started losing weight and all of a sudden I got pregnant. But it's a little bit deeper than that. Is that the pathophysiology behind it allowed the ovulation pathway to awaken and to allow, and which then leads to them ovulating and getting pregnant as a result. That's how lifestyle modification, diet changes, exercise can impact fertility. And that's the most beautiful in my world, the most beautiful reward, because I see it so often. And then you have the long-term positive impact that you get from that.
I love that because oftentimes we want a pill, we want that medication that's going to take away our ailment. But at the end of the day, when you can modify or change an outcome because of diet and exercise, like that is like that's the
It's
ultimate goal.
huge. It's
It's
huge. It's
huge.
it is so much positive reinforcement that you see those women continue to maintain those changes because of the positive rewards. But you have to remember, there's another group of women that will do the same thing and they'll get those results. And that's the group that can get frustrated, discouraged, anxious, depressed. And we have to remember that, and which is why I always say, everyone is not the same. Everyone is not the same. So when I have a woman who comes in and tells me, I've been trying this for so long, I'm not losing weight, I've implemented all the changes that I could. I eat clean and I exercise six days a week and nothing is changing. You can imagine the frustration, right? That's a woman who needs a little bit of help. Right. She needs a little bit of help where you can see medically assisted diet changes, where you can boost her metabolism enough to kick things. And then with those changes that she has implemented, she can just continue to do well. And you can start to see the weight falling off. And now she will get the rewards that she's looking for, whether it's to get pregnant or just to have a healthier lifestyle. It might not be the case for someone else who is able to do it naturally, but some women do need some assistance with medication.
The one last question that I realized I didn't ask you, and this is more so for our listeners who are, getting ready to make that first appointment because they think they have PCOS. How can you safely say you have PCOS?
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, again, because it's a spectrum of symptoms, so we have a way to define like who gets the diagnosis, right? And to summarize it quickly, irregular menses is one of them. So I need to hear in history that you have infrequent cycles. So that's one. Then another criteria that needs to be met is the ultrasound findings. We need the ultrasound findings. So ultrasound findings will be PCOS noted on ultrasound, so multicystic ovaries. That will be one. And then the last one is evidence of hyperandrogenism, which is the patient will say, I have acne, I have excessive hair on my face. And then when you do the labs, you find that her testosterone is high. So if you can find evidence of elevated androgen, so then you put the puzzle together and you just need two out of three of what I listed to make a diagnosis.
For someone who is struggling with PCOS or who was recently diagnosed with PCOS, what are maybe some advice you can give them? What is a resource you can point them to, or just like a general sense of encouragement that you can give them?
Yes. Well, first of all, I do want to say that if you have symptoms of PCOS that you suspect you have, the first resource, the first thing you need to tap into is your gynecologist. Talk to your gynecologist, share your symptoms, and share your concern and suspicion. Then the second thing is to make sure that you have a clear goal of what you're looking to achieve. I think it makes it a lot easier to determine where you're trying to go, understanding the disease that we now explain, like what is your goal? And finally, understand that you're not alone in this, right? There's a community of women with PCOS. Joining those groups can be helpful. Social media, Facebook, going to the right place for information, like joining the PCOS Awareness Association, for example, where you will find the resources to support you through your journey. There's a lot of resources out there, the PCOS Foundation, all of those things. But the main thing that I always say, and I started with, is the mental health aspect of it. Take care of yourself. Make sure that you take care of yourself. You're aware of the fact that it's a disease like any other, right? There's no shame in it. Just like someone will have high blood pressure and take their medication and address that, there's no shame around the issues that PCOS will bring. Although there's a lot of body image associated with it, there's no shame with it. So make sure to take care of yourself and your mental health, and seek the help that you need if you feel that you need it.
I love that. I love that. There is no shame. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that is really a good place for us to end. Thank you so much, Corinne, for humoring me.
Listen, thank you for challenging me. You know, like sometimes I feel that I need to be pushed a little bit to talk about something, because you get out of touch with what people are really struggling with, right? And keeping an ear on the ground and what patients need to hear. So I appreciate that. And thank you for a wonderful session.
Absolutely. All right. My name is Dr. Pindula Erica Choa.
And I'm Dr. Karina Oshtani, and this is Hey Doc.
Let's chat.